The committee will come to order. There's a quorum. Representative Doty, would you like to move the minutes?
Madam Chair, I would move the minutes of February 25th for approval.
All those in favor?
Madam Chair, I would just note that the 11th meeting up in the top right-hand corner.
Well, thank you for that advice. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Well, I'm just going to brag right now. I have my grandbaby this morning, and I'm so excited. Can't wait to hold him. I saw him right after, but I had to come here then. So, I'm excited. Another farmer.
Everybody's doing okay, Madam Chair?
Great. Thanks, yeah. So is Grandma.
You want me to do the bill for him?
Can you handle
it? Start off by singing to Mr. Epstein.
Dodie has to present his bill.
Dodie, you want a bill?
Dodie's presenting it.
Schumanski. You want a bill?
Dodie, my name.
He's our name, huh? Well, Dodie should do it then.
I'm waiting for the author.
Oh, here you come.
There's. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Did you call the bill already?
No.
On this sit over there.
You're okay. Representative Hamilton, would you move the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House File 797 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House File 797, I'm just going to start off by, again, thank you for the hearing. This is a very interesting issue that Mr. David Dayon, a constituent of mine, brought to me a while back. He's going to tell you all about it, but I'm going to start it off by suggesting that if any of you watched the news on Friday night, and I understand it was rerun on Saturday morning, there was apparently a less than responsible report that was presented by a reporter from KSTP Channel 5 who suggested that this is somehow a horse slaughter bill. I'm here to tell you that that is not at all what this bill is about. And frankly, I left a message for that reporter on Saturday morning. I have not watched his piece, and I do not intend to watch his piece. He did call on Friday afternoon and asked to speak, but, you know, when they wait till the 11th hour to find out what it is, the bill, as you know, was up for hearing last Monday. And then we've got other lives that we lead. To run a story like that without actually talking to any of the people involved and suggest that it's something that it's not at all about is it's more than just not responsible, and we'll deal with that later. At any rate, I'm introducing Mr. David Dayon, who will tell you why he brought the bill forward and what it does.
Thank you. Can you state your name for the record?
Madam Chair, committee members, bear with me. I'll try and keep my voice together if I can. My name is David Dayon. I live in St. Michael, Minnesota, in Wright County. I own a horse farm. That's how I make my living. I've operated my farm for over 40 years. And what the intent of this bill, the horse industry in this state is an extremely important part of the agricultural economy. At the present time, based on surveys that were done by the University of Minnesota, the horse industry in this state produces about $553 million of direct economic impact. Its total impact is about $930 million. There are several horse-related expenditures and the like that are worth about another $678 million a year. We're the third largest class of livestock behind pigs and cattle. There are somewhere between 200 and 250,000 horses in the state of Minnesota. What this statute was presented was to give a clear and decisive definition of horses as livestock. In the packets I've supplied you information, there are currently five existing statutes and one administrative law that clearly define horses as livestock. They're defined for the investment livestock investment program, and they're for the licensing of livestock dealers. They're defined for as in terms of other uses of them, but each one of these statutes clearly states that livestock are horses. Livestock are horses. Livestock are horses. Each one of them. What this bill does is to clearly define horses as livestock under Chapter 17, which is the Department of Agriculture. There is no clear definitive definition of horses. Although they are listed as livestock, there's no language to define how they're raised, what's involved with the raising of them, and the like. This language is based on similar language that's currently in use for other forms of livestock to define their use, their care, and other terminology related to them. It was the intent of this bill that you could, the Department of Agriculture would then have clear and definitive language as to what is involved in the raising of horses. This is an ag definition. This is not meant to be a tax definition. This is a very, very broad definition. It covers all forms of horses. As for tax purposes, there are non-commercial or non-revenue generating uses of horses. We understand that. This defines all those uses and is not what I think is an acceptable definition to be used for tax purposes. It is strictly a definition of the horse industry. This language includes the word equine. Defines horses and other equine. By using this word, which is not used in the other form, in the other definitions currently in use, it ensures that horses will continue to be covered under existing animal cruelty laws and statutes, which under the animal cruelty statutes, there is a specific statute that defines equines. So this in no way gives any change to their status under animal cruelty laws. In fact, it reinforces them because this definition does in fact use the word equines. The intent was to just simply to define horses as they are related to agriculture.
Thank you. Thank you. Madam Chair, I've got, I don't know if it's Dr. or Professor Zimmerman from the Department of Agriculture, if you want to hear from them to tell you how they treat horses generally. And then we've got a couple of horse folks that drove up from Blue Earth this morning after they heard about this. So would you like to hear from Mr.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Hammer. Hi. State your name for the record, please.
My name is Kurt Zimmerman. I'm a livestock development supervisor with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I'm Madam Chairman and members of the committee. It was referred to the various definitions that we have at the Department of Ag and the various statutes that talk about what livestock is and what horses are included, and I believe the term six was used. There may be many more, but I believe I've located half a dozen definitions of livestock or meat products is having included horses. The most recent numbers that we have as far as getting our hands around how large of an industry this is somewhat difficult, but we do have some information from the 2007 census of agriculture. We have, according to this report, we have just over 13,000 horse and pony farms in Minnesota with 90,100 head. approximately 70,000 of these numbers were listed as being owned. This does not represent every horse in the state of Minnesota. According to the information that is put together by the Census of Agriculture, they determine a farm by having $1,000 worth of sales from that operation, or the capability of having $1,000 worth of sales. So according to the latest 2007 information, we had over 90,100 horses that met that qualification. The 2004 study by the University of Minnesota was already referred to, and I won't repeat that. But their information from a total number, if you keep in mind the 90,000 head that was included in that ag statistics information, the 2004 study that was incorporating all horses listed 155,000 horses in the state. Larger than some of our other livestock species that we do business with on a regular basis. I'd like to just touch on one area of involvement that I personally was responsible for at the Department of Agriculture, and that was the Livestock Investment Grant Program that the House and Senate then was signed into law this past year. That was the Livestock Investment Grant Program. That is included also in Statute 17. And we define livestock there as beef cattle, dairy cattle, swine, poultry, goats, mules, farm cervidae, ratite, bison, sheep, horses, and llamas. The horses were included in the Livestock Investment Grant Program that we had in 2008. I'd have to say, in working with all of the various industries, the horse industry probably was one of the most aggressive and most enthusiastic respondents to the Investment Grant Program. I talked to several about their interest and about their participation. We had 12 applications that came into the department that represented $2.2 million of investments just in last year alone. A couple hundred thousand on average for each application that came in. Pretty substantial. And we also were able to grant one of the applications out of the 38 total to a horse operation in Crow Wing County, Minnesota. If you look at some of the items and investments that were made by the horse industry, they included fencing, pens, corrals, feed storage, manure handling equipment, watering systems, and livestock housing. If you didn't look at the species check mark on the application, you wouldn't know what type of livestock it was, because it was all the same no matter what the industry was. So we do have the various segments of our statutes that currently deal with livestock and that talk about horses. The Investment Grant Program is one. We have a Dealer and Licensing Act in 17A that talks about licensing and bonding. This provision is not included there. We have several others, the Packers and Stockyards Act and Statute 31B. There's several other statutes. I says there's a half a dozen that include some definition to talk about livestock and include horses in that term. So that's just a basic overview of the Department of Agriculture. I'd be glad to take any questions.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Zimmerman, first of all, what happened to the emus? Didn't they make the cut on the livestock?
They would be included in the ratite section of the Livestock Investment Grant Program, but I don't believe, Representative Erdahl, that we had any applications in that program.
All right, well, continuing, please. Madam Chair, under what circumstances can horses be killed in Minnesota today?
I'm not aware of there being a circumstance where any horses can be killed in any slaughtering facility. If an animal would need to have some work by a veterinarian, that may be a case where that animal could be disposed of, but under no circumstances do we have slaughtering facilities in the U.S., Minnesota included.
Representative.
Madam Chair, Mr. Zimmerman, so downed horses can be killed by veterinarians, or is that?
Mr. Zimmerman.
Madam Chairman, Representative Erdahl, I believe that is the humane practice conducted by our veterinarians, and we would have some veterinarians in the audience that could address that issue.
Representative Erdahl.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'd be interested in hearing from veterinarians, but what I'm getting at is horses may be used for meat, hides, and animal byproducts, and perhaps the gentleman up there could better answer, since at this point we can't kill horses, where are these coming? Are they coming from downed horses or horses that have just died naturally? Where would that come from?
Mr. Dale.
Madam Chair, Mr. Representative Erdahl, that's exactly the situation. The meat, hides, and animal byproducts are the result. Horses and cattle are very large animals, and about the only way that you can dispose of an animal that's either died of natural causes or had to be put down because of an injury or a life-threatening situation is that you have to call the local rendering company to remove that animal for you. The byproducts of the rendering of dead animals are going to be the meat, the hide, and then the meat is eventually ends up as an animal byproduct that becomes fertilizer, and also some oils and fats are also removed through a cooking process they call tankage.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. So then, together say this doesn't change the law in the respect that slaughter is not going to be permitted. It would just be downed animals or animals that had died naturally.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, that's all that I meant by putting this language, having this language in the bill, was simply to state that there are some byproducts that come from horses. Albeit the fact that it comes from horses that are already dead and not because they are being slaughtered specifically for these uses.
Representative Erdahl.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering if anyone would be able to read this at some point and think that slaughter was permitted, or if other state laws already supersede that. Actually, Senator Dill also has a bill on horse euthanasia, permitting the circumstances where horses can be killed, and I was wondering if perhaps Representative Emmer has teamed up with Senator Dill on this or any other bills. But I'll have to wait for him to come back to answer that. Representative Emmer, I was just wondering. Maybe you heard me say that Senator Dill has a bill on horse euthanasia to permit the killing of horses in certain circumstances, because right now apparently you have to go to Canada or to Mexico in many cases to kill a horse. Have you consulted with him or have you teamed with Senator Dill on this or any other bills regarding horses?
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, no. No, and perhaps maybe it was Senator Dill that the less than responsible reporter contacted, because he had talked to me. But that's not this bill.
Representative Powell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Zimmerman, my question is what is the federal definition of horses as it relates to livestock? And if we change this, will that impact federal farm programs to our farmers in any way, shape, or form?
Representative Zimmerman.
Madam Chair, Representative Faulk, I'm not aware of the specific terms with the USDA. I can tell you that from a reporting status, that horse and horse farms are included part of the livestock operations, and it's based on the revenue that is generated from that operation. And that comes from the National Agricultural Statistics Service. The other area that we would need to check further that I can get back to you on would be the USDA disaster programs, whether they be drought or flood related. The state of Minnesota has had several here in recent years, and the feed shortage and some of the assistance programs we have been guided by the regulations from the USDA, and we can get that definition and try to get that defined for you.
Thank you. Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I'm still trying to get a firm handle on exactly what the purposes of the bill and what the benefits would be to the industry. If you could tell me, if it would this allow them to qualify for certain tax preferences or for, green acres, whatever the case may be, that they wouldn't otherwise qualify
Madam
for.
Chair, Representative Eakin, I would love the bill to be about that, but it's not. And perhaps at this point, it would be good, David could go into it again, but you're going to hear from Ron, is he here?
the two horse how do you want me to refer to you? The two horse guys that drove up from Blue Earth today. In fact, it might be a good time to have them testify because maybe they could explain for you why it's important that this is done.
Representative Easton?
That would be very helpful if someone would like to come up to that.
Representative Morrow?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Zimmerman, before I lose you there, just a quick question. Mr. Zimmerman, you mentioned something about farms and $1,000 in sales. Could you just repeat what that was? In your testimony, you said something about a farm and having at least $1,000 in sales. I'm just asking you to repeat that because I didn't get it fully down.
Madam Chair and Representative, the definition that I used was especially used by the Census of Agriculture. And I have a copy of the actual definition with the 2007 census that I'd be happy to provide for you. But basically it says that either $1,000 was generated in that calendar year or had the potential of generating in that particular year. It didn't talk about farm size, but it had to do with the amount of revenue generated by that farm. And I'll be happy to provide that for you.
Thank you. Would you like to give your name for the record?
I'm Ron Greiman from Blue Earth, Minnesota, owner of Midwest Horse Digest, a horse-related magazine that serves the Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa market.
And I'm Greg Johnson from Sherburne, Minnesota, of the I-90 Expo Center. We do horse shows, events, different events, and have a catalog horse sale every other month. Okay. Well, he's just asking me where you were asking about the USDA and that. My purpose here is... as of now, running a business, and the horse business is a multi-billion-dollar business, it has just been taken for granted that it is a livestock, is qualified under the livestock, because we're regulated by the USDA, by the PNS, any other thing associated with livestock, the horses are regulated. If they are changed to, say, a companion animal, it kind of opens up a can of worms. We're down there. We have a catalog sale. It's not a large sale. We don't take over like maybe 75 head at most. And sometimes they're higher dollar horses, stuff like that. But the big thing there, if they're not livestock, I've talked to the USDA about this over the years. Then right now we have to fall under the same regulations as any other marketing firm. But if they're not livestock, they're not regulated by being licensed and bonded. Our license says livestock marketing is what our license is. Also, the concern for the horse people, under the USDA, like when West Nile was a problem a few years ago, you have the USDA, that's a lot of the research on disease and stuff like any problems that occur, you got the USDA out there helping you doing the disease net. If they're not qualified as livestock, then it's up to the individuals or the drug companies or independents to take care of all this stuff. It is a very nice deal for the horse person to have that, all that free services from the USDA. I don't think a lot of the horse people realize what's included with being called livestock. Because you do have the benefits, you have their medical teams, you have any disease outbreak, they're right on top of it. If it's a companion animal, there really isn't that organization out there to help support them. And if it's not considered livestock, you don't have the licensing and the bonding, and it keeps everything kind of above board. And the horse business has had a reputation over the years of being a little shady in different areas. The USDA does keep it straight. You got the packers and stockyards in there, but they just deal with livestock. My concern is if it is not called livestock anymore, then it's a separate entity. And you're talking a multi-billion-dollar business that nobody likes regulations, but it needs to be regulated. And If you take that out of there, now you've opened a can of worms. Now how do you regulate this, and who is going to regulate it? But it's very simple to keep it as livestock, because the regulations and everything are already in place, which have been for many years. But if it's redefined as not livestock, then they're going to have to come up with a different form of regulatory practices.
Madam Chair, Representative Eakin, I would only add the piece, and David's looking for it now. You should have in your packet a letter from the Department of Revenue in which there was a position taken, well, it's an email actually, from a Jane Grossinger, to Jane Grossinger from Stephanie Nyhaus, Principal Appraiser, Property Tax Division, Minnesota, Department of Revenue. And it says, I just quote you the first sentence, horses are not an agricultural product. They are more of a pet. That is what started this for me. Mr. Dayan brought this email to me, showed it to me, and later he brought the bill. So what you have in front of you is a discussion about there can be no confusion for the reasons that you've heard. We believe we need to clarify that, in fact, horses are livestock. With the protections of the cruelty to animal statutes that you heard Mr. Dan refer to. And I do have, John Hagan from the Department of Revenue. I was kind enough to come today if you want to hear from him at all. Or does that answer the question? Okay.
Thank you. Representative Olin?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think Representative Emmers, you may have answered. You know, I think this Department of Revenue that you just referred to may have answered my question, because I had the question of why are we doing this now, and that may have just answered it. But how long ago was this email sent? Do you know right off there?
I believe... not
Madam Chair.
I'm sorry. Madam Chair, Representative Olin. I acquired this from this Jane Grossinger, who is listed on here, is the city appraiser for the city of St. Michael, and she gave me this document approximately 60 days ago.
Representative Morrow?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just to follow, and this does help Representative Emmer seeing this email and understanding. I understand Subdivision 1, the classification question. Could you just repeat for me, though, Subdivision 2, the agricultural pursuit section, and why that's necessary? I understand the classification part. I'm trying to figure out what Subdivision 2 seeks to accomplish in the bill.
If I may, Representative Morrow, and Madam Chair, Representative Morrow, what's done under Subdivision 2 is to define what actually is involved in the raising of horses. I think that a lot of times, as a horseman, it's extremely frustrating to have people tell me that they just assume that a horse farm is a two or three horses in the backyard that you go pleasure riding with all the time. What I tried to accomplish with this language was to spell out specifically some of the main uses of horse farms, be them horse breeding farms, horse training farms, and horse boarding farms, and or combinations of these. In other words, in my particular situation, I have a horse breeding farm, but I also board horses that are having post-operative rehab type situations. Other operations may have training facilities in addition to boarding those horses for training. The next sentence, that these are also accomplished on a limited acreage, meaning that unlike most forms of agriculture, the horse business in most cases is done out of a large indoor arena facility, 150 by 200, 150 by 300, 50 by 75, depending upon your particular use. So if you were to go buy an operating, cash-flowing horse farm, you may not even see any horses when you drive by it, because most of the function of that horse farm is being done within the facilities. And that's why I pointed out the fact that it's done on a limited acreage, that it is an intensive use, that you don't need large amounts of acreage for the raising of crops or anything,
You don't need a large amount of acreage for grazing these animals. For the most part, if you ask most horse people, it's in their best interest to purchase your forage, your hay, and your grain, and your straw from other farmers who are in the business of raising those crops. You do not have to worry. Horses require a higher level, a higher grade of forage, of hay. It should be dust-free. So rather than having to deal with trying to raise that type of hay, it's much simpler to try and buy it on the commercial market from other farmers. My operation, with about 35 to 40 horses, I go through about 3 semi-loads a year, which is about 80 tons. And I buy all of my grain normally in semi-loads, except for my mixed seeds. Same situation there. It's much easier for me to have someone else raise those crops, and I'm able to buy the best crop that's available instead of having to worry about whether or not I can sufficiently raise a good crop. So therefore, you will find horse farms running on limited acreages, and they're in intensive use. The other reason for this is to be able to control the feeding, the safety, and the overall condition of the animals. If you've got show animals, you don't want them being injured by interacting with other horses. You can control the feed intake on each individual horse. In my broodmare situation, it's not that way. I can turn my broodmares in a herd type of situation, much like you would with dairy cows or stock cows. But it isn't. It is a way of being able to control their feed intake and to control their overall condition and safety.
Representative Olin.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Mr. Dion, I'm just going to ask this question. I may make an amendment afterwards orally, but what exactly is the purpose of the wording horses may be used for meat, hides, and animal byproducts, even in this bill? It doesn't seem to have any good reason to exist.
Madam Chair, Representative Olin, why don't I quickly address that? Because this is not intended to be a tax bill. But it was originally put in the bill because of this email that talks about products. It's not a product. So, again, I've spoken with John Hagan. He's in the room. Even though that's not the focus, if someone's going to move an amendment referencing that language, I would like to just have Mr. Hagan confirm for us that language makes no difference either way as far as they're concerned.
Thank you, Representative Emmers, but that's not my problem with the wording. My problem with the wording is the Humane Society has a problem with the wording.
It has nothing to do with that issue.
Representative Morrow?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. If I'm following correctly, Madam Chair, I think I would move an amendment on page 1, line 9, removing the line, horses may be used for meat, hides, and animal byproducts. At least that would allow the discussion to occur on this line. So I would move that amendment.
Before
you do, can we have Mr. Hagan just tell us if it has any import at all?
Madam Chairman, members, my name is John Hagan. I'm Assistant Director with the Property Tax Division of the Department of Revenue. And Representative Emmer asked me to speak briefly to that very language, the horses may be used for meat, hides, and animal byproducts. And I'm not certain what it does either. I'm a little confused with some of the issues here. I think what it eventually is going to get down to is I believe we're trying to get clarification for property tax purposes about agricultural pursuits. I'd like to point out Ms. Nyhus's letter that Mr. Dan Rodden introduced with a generic response to a generic question, which I regret us answering, and I supervise Ms. Nyhus, so I can speak to it personally. I wish that had not gone out. It was a generic response, and we've since taken measures to make sure we don't respond on hypothetical generic responses. I certainly regret some of that language in there with respect to pets, but again, I believe it was generated from a more generic type of request as that. There's a lot of confusion of where horses lie in the agricultural definition. And it, some assessors consider a lot of equine-related activities, horse-related activities, to be agricultural. Some consider them to be residential. I think there are agricultural uses of horses, and I think there's some that are residential uses. One or two horses in the backyard is clearly, in my mind, a residential use. I think operations like Mr. Dayon and these other two gentlemen are speaking about are very probably agricultural pursuits. With respect to the specific language, a horse may be used for meat, hides, and animal byproducts, I understand that the reason it was inserted into this proposal was that it may be a tipping point that would make the definition of horses an agricultural product. From my perspective, I don't think it adds anything to the agricultural definition, and I don't believe deleting it would undermine or change the discussion over when should horses be agricultural and when should they be something else.
Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I understand, Representative, I'm moving this to help put the bill into the shape. I understand you'd like it in as well.
Actually, Madam Chair, Representative Morrow, in reading it, I do, there's one other gentleman that's going to tell you about a potential concern, and I really appreciate Mr. Hagan. I think the appraiser was simply trying to address the question, and it created, actually, what it did is pointed out the confusion in the agricultural definition when it comes to horses. Again, this bill isn't intended to address any tax issues, but it's pointed out that's an issue for another committee in a different bill. We're just talking about the definition of horses as livestock. And I do, in response to Representative Morrow, I would like one of the gentlemen from Blue Earth just to explain a potential issue. Thank you, Mr. Hagan. I'm not Blue Earth. That's right, Sherburne. Same difference, right?
What I was getting at is the line that you were talking about the meat, the hide, all this stuff. I think when they wrote that, what they were looking at, there is a bill up, I don't know if it was ever passed or not, but I believe it was 503, a federal bill that prohibited the slaughter, the transportation, it was a transportation act that prohibited transportation of horses to slaughter. It prohibited basically this language, meat, hides, byproducts, and that from transportation, which where he was saying defining it as livestock, if you have a horse that dies, the rendering truck would not be allowed to come and pick up that horse because of the bill 503. I might be wrong on that, but I believe it is 503. It's a federal bill which prohibits the transportation of it, which this would allow the rendering truck to come and haul that. If that bill has passed, or if it does pass, the rendering truck would not be allowed to come out and get your horse because of that line that is in there. It would be prohibited from hauling it. And I think I haven't talked about it, but I'm assuming that that is the reason that that is in there.
Madam Chair,
Representative.
All I will add for the committee members and anyone else in the room, if this is wrong, I'd be happy. I'd like to hear it. Mr. Johnson raises a valid concern, but I don't think it's the case. We're only dealing with a state definition, and I don't think that with that language in or without, it's going to impact some potential federal rule. That's an issue for someplace else, but that would be my feeling. So,
Madam Chair,
Representative Morrow?
Madam Chair, I'll withdraw the amendment. I was just trying to help the author get the bill into the shape that I understood the author wanted it in.
Representative Faust, did you forget?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, Mr. Hagan just kind of alluded to this, is there certainly a lot of horse farms in the area that are farms as yours are, Mr. Dan, but I know an awful lot of other people that have one or two horses in the backyard. You know, maybe even most people that own horses are in that situation across the state. And I'm wondering what the impact is to them of this bill passing. Does it all of a sudden give them the ability to homestead their land and classify it as agriculture. What impact, I mean, and is it all good, or are there some bad things that go along with that too as far as zoning requirements and things like that? But, and so I guess I'd like to know what both positive and negative impacts are on the people that have, you know, one or two horses in the backyard instead of a true horse farm like what you've got.
Mr. Madam Chair and Representative Powell, the problem, and Mr. Dan can answer the question, but this is an issue that's not part of this bill, and that's the point, is that whether it's one horse, two horse, and a revenue issue, that's not being addressed here. This is simply classifying horses as livestock. A determination as to what a tax treatment impact you get based on number of horses, number of animal units, number of acreage, that's an entirely different issue. And that, if I don't know if you have the ability to answer that.
Well,
maybe Mr. Hagan.
I can give another answer of sorts to, excuse me, Madam Chair and Representative Fowler. I can give another answer of sorts to the direction I believe Representative Fowler should go. I'm chairman of the City Planning Commission. If someone were to come to the City Planning Commission and say they wanted to put a couple of horses in, or a horse in a residential area within the city of St. Michael, they would be turned down because our existing ordinances define horses as livestock. Whether that individual wants to call that particular horse a pet or not, it is still livestock. The passage of this language here only reaffirms language that is already existing in most city ordinances defining horses as livestock. It does not affect those kinds of issues as Representative Emmer already alluded as far as taxes and the like, but as far as city ordinances, horses are considered livestock under most city ordinances.
Representative Paul.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate what both of you said, but Representative Emmer, I'm sure you understand this better than I do, that sometimes a small change in a few words in one place has a huge consequence in another area that you don't even intend it to. And I guess that's my concern, is that what's going to happen as a result of making this change?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Powell, these gentlemen will explain that it won't have that effect. I won't do that.
Madam Chair, Representative Powell, John Hagan with the Department of Revenue once again. From my perspective as a property tax administrator, I don't believe that this language is going to affect how we treat horses for property tax purposes. A good analogy would be, years ago there used to be a provision in agricultural statutes about beekeeping or apiary pursuits, and we did not recognize that as a agricultural pursuit for property tax purposes until it was actually specifically put into the law. Now, it may be an incremental step towards that direction, but in itself, this language will not change, in my opinion, it will not change the way we treat horses and horse farms for property tax purposes.
And Madam Chair, my name is Robin Osnick on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. Mm-hmm. And MAAO is neutral on the bill, but we understand this is going to the floor, not being referred to tax committee. With our discussions with Mr. Dan, the bill's authors, Department of Revenue, Department of Agriculture, in advance of this hearing, we understand that this will not have any impact as to preferential property tax treatment under the current law or under if the bill was enacted into law.
To that point. Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for clarification, the motion was for this to pass and be referred to the tax committee. Mm-hmm. And Madam Chair?
Representative. Oh.
Am I still up? Am I up?
No. Actually, there's a couple before. Is that okay? Representative DeBolin.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and I'm going to reiterate and remake Representative Morrow's motion, which is what I was going to do in the first place, delete the words of page 1, line 9, horses may be used for meets,
hides, and animal byproducts. And oh, incidentally, I'm not even referring to the property taxes. I'm referring to Humane Society concerns with the issue. So I'm going to get a whole different issue than sitting arguing property taxes for a half hour.
Madam Chair, to that point.
Representative Hamilton.
Madam Chair, to that point, we've been talking about good intentions with unintended consequences, and that's one of them, Representative Olin. And I see that there's an A4 amendment, and I think that we should be moving that one, and we can talk to that one if you're willing to withdraw your amendment, Representative Olin. Because what one of the testifiers said about the rendering process, it's very clear. We're not talking about horse slaughter here. That was done at the federal level. That's not the issue. The issue here today is the classification of livestock. And then subsequently, if an animal does perish or if it's euthanized, what can we do with the animal then? If we remove that language, Representative Olin, it is my fear that then all of a sudden we have a whole other issue. Because I think it was said that rendering would not be allowed. That's probably wrong, but there is absolutely no incentive whatsoever for the rendering to come out there and pick up that animal. And so basically they won't. If there's absolutely no end user, no product for an animal that has perished, there's, again, no incentive for them to come out and get there. So if we move your amendment, Representative Olin, it makes it even murkier and less clear. And so therefore, I think that we should go ahead and withdraw your amendments. We can discuss the A4 amendments and move forward.
Representative Olin?
I would just as soon vote my amendment up or down and be done with it, because I'm going to stick to that amendment.
Madam Chair, can I address this?
Representative Hammer.
Representative Hamilton, I believe I feel the way that you do, but I also think after talking to the folks that are representing the Humane Society's interest and some other interests that are concerned, if you read the bill closely, I've come to the conclusion that that language actually does nothing more than create a problem. If you go to the very next sentence, it says horses and their products, which I believe covers everything that we're talking about that's legal. And that's why I don't oppose what Representative Olin's doing. And I will tell you that you were kind enough to contact me before, and we had a discussion briefly earlier today before I sat in on a meeting before I came here. In fact, that's why I was late walking in, is because this group of people was meeting. And the specific discussion was, what does that sentence that Representative Olin's motion, what does that actually do? Well, it's actually a redundancy if you go to the next paragraph that says horses and their products. Now, if I'm incorrect about that, I would hope that somebody would come to the table and say no, that products would not involve rendering, fertilizer, animal feed, etc.
Madam Chair, I go on record with reinforcement with this. I would like to put, there is at the federal level an attack on using our U.S. highways for transportation of animals to slaughter and or other users. So there is a risk of what Mr. Johnson had said, of them taking that to the nth degree and saying you can't transport your horse to a rendering company. I just lost a horse, my best horse, 1,320 pounds. He's not a dog. Yes, he was a companion of mine, but he's livestock and was always raised that way. He's raised in the barn, not in my house. I'm here at the 11th hour based on what happened on Channel 5 News. There was a bold statement said, probably, hopefully, incorrectly, and I'm here to support this bill to clarify that horses are livestock and not companion animals. If they get thrown into the category with cats and dogs, you've already discussed it, I won't go over it, that's a whole other area. But it affects the industry and the one and two horse owner, which is the majority of what we have in this state. If no other reason of what to do with the animal when it's done. And it is under attack. It's under attack by the Humane Society and other entities because it's another tool to try to regulate what we do with our animals. And maybe I'm speaking out of context, but a 1,320-pound horse is not just a pet. I mean, he's bigger than the average cattle, and the average horse is 1,000 pounds. I'm a born and raised farmer, displaced in the 80s. Got involved in the horse industry because I love it and I love marketing. It's under attack again. Another level of agricultural business under attack. And you can go where you want to. There's everything from ranchers to one and two horse owners. I'm in the middle. It needs to be addressed. It's according to what I've heard, it's in five or six other areas in legislation that horses are livestock, but not in agricultural community. I'm simply here to reinforce that it gets in the wording that they say livestock or remain livestock. It was news to me on Saturday when somebody said that, okay, now they're just companion animals. It needs to be clarified. Thank you.
Representative Dostoevsky.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I have more of a comment related to this from my experiences than anything else. As we looked through here, there was talk about agricultural pursuits, and from my experience in the farm sector and some of the nuisance lawsuits that we see all kinds of livestock operations coming under nowadays and seeking protection under our right to farm law. I think what agricultural pursuits does in that section is it provides legitimacy to horses as a livestock species, much in the same way that our other species of livestock have. I'm actually Representative Olin opposed to the amendment. I think we need to be explicit about what different types of uses livestock are used for. And as agriculturalists and supporters of the ag industry in Minnesota, not back away from those realities. Every other species of livestock we have is used for meat, hides, or animal byproducts.
Representative Olin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not even saying, I think the wording is just causing a red flag to go out there. I think the same wording exists if you eliminate those words by the next sentence, as Representative Emmers has said. I think the next sentence can be right after the words that I want to eliminate, probably will be easily used to say the same thing, but these words are a red flag that isn't needed.
Does anybody have anything else for the amendment? Representative
Hamilton. Madam Chair, just clarification. If we would, how would I go about, in the event we agreed upon this amendment, could I amend where this bill goes? Instead of going to taxes, then it doesn't appear to be a tax bill. It doesn't appear to be any more issue. Could we send it straight to the floor? To the general register, Madam Chair.
Well, I suppose we can. I'll probably be in trouble, but...
What we vote to do it, it's not your fault.
That's right.
We're up to date. It'll be Hamilton's fault.
So, We're on the Olin amendment right now. Colby, can you give us the words?
Madam Chair, Representative Olin's amendment is on page 1, line 9. Delete, horses may be used for meat, hides, and animal byproducts.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Division. All those in favor, raise your hand. Okay. Could you raise them again? We have a little... Opposed? According to this, it's 7 ayes and 3 noes. The amendment's been adopted.
Madam.
Representative Hamilton.
I would like to move House File 797, amend where House File 797 goes, be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, we could vote to amend the motion, but then know that we're not passing it on, and we're just voting to amend the motion, and then we could have further discussion on the bill.
Representative Hamilton moved. Representative Klaus.
To the motion, I just want a clarification that when it's on the General Register, one of the other committee chairs can still pull it off the General Register. Isn't that correct?
Madam Chair.
Representative Hamilton.
Yeah. Madam Chair, to my motion, you know, we have listened to the testimony with Representative Olin's amendment. That takes care of that issue. This is not a tax bill. And so, therefore, it doesn't need to go to a tax committee, would be the logical explanation on that. And so, instead of going through those additional steps, let's just take it straight to the General Register and be done with it.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hamilton, I would tend to agree with you. I may want to ask Mr. Hagan to return to the stand, because at about 3:20, he said it's a property tax issue. So I wanted him to explain what that meant.
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm not sure I was listening to myself when I was talking, and I apologize for that. I do firmly believe it will become a property tax issue. I think that in conversation with Mr. Day and just some of the general concerns over the agricultural classification that this legislature is dealing with this year, I really believe in time it will go before taxes, and from my perspective, it properly should. I believe part of what we're trying to do here is try to establish how horses should be treated for property tax purposes.
Madam Chair and Representative Morrow, if Mr. Hagan could just expand when you say that. This definition doesn't need to go in front of taxes, but the issue itself, you're saying, I mean, this has been our discussion. I firmly believe the issue needs to get addressed as to number of animal units, et cetera, et cetera. But that's not what we're addressing today. We're simply clarifying the definition. And I just want to make sure that I understood correctly if that isn't what Mr. Hagan is referencing.
Madam Chair, Representative Emmer, I'll restate my position on this, is that this does not affect how we deal with horses for property tax purposes. So whatever decisions this committee makes is beyond, I guess, not a concern of mine from a property tax perspective.
Mr. Hagan, do you think, as amended, 797 should go to the property tax committee? Because I heard you say the definition, and I'm hearing that as being subdivision 1, but there's also a subdivision 2. So I just want to know.
Madam Chair, Representative Morrow, I'm conflicted. my whole perspective is an area of property tax. I sleep and breathe property taxes, as sad as that may be. So everything I look at the world through a property tax perspective. So from my perspective, I do expect this will end up in property tax someday, and we'll deal with it there. And however your role impacts that, I can't really speak to.
Madam Chair, Representative Morrow, can we just do it one more time? Because I understand,
And it's a bit unfair because that is the treatment. When I asked Mr. Hagan to come down, that was the risk that I took, is confusing it. But again, I think what is important to note is when he answers, if you pass this legislation and if it goes to the floor and it gets passed, it's not going to change how the Department of Revenue evaluates horses for tax purposes. The real issue that's going to have to get in front of the legislature, and hopefully soon, is the issue that gives them more direction as to how they're supposed to treat this type of an agricultural use. And I think that's a very important distinction when we're talking about our purposes here today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm okay with just going to the general register because if the, you know, the people above our pay scale can make the decision that they do want to take a look at it, and that's fine with me. But I believe that this change in definition would impact what happens to some people's qualifying for green acres or not. And so I believe that it would impact that, at least that potential is there. But like I say, I'm okay with it going to the general register, and people on those committees can grab the bill from there if they want it.
Madam Chair, before you go to another one, Representative Faust, I appreciate that. Can we just make sure the record's clear? Because a representative for the assessors is here, and I believe that he can clarify for Representative Faust on the Green Acres issue as well.
Madam Chair, Representative Faust, I'm convinced this would have absolutely no effect on Green Acres. This is just an agricultural chapter. The Green Acres is 273.111, and the definition, again, from the agricultural definitions, do not go to the property tax definitions unless they're codified that way. And I am very much convinced this will not affect Green Acres.
Representative Egan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Has there been any indication from the Tax Committee Chair or Property Tax Division Chair as to whether they would want to hear this bill or not?
Representative Deacon, I'm Madam Chair. I did receive an email from the Tax Chair requesting the bill.
Madam Chair, I repeat my motion to amend and send House File 797 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register.
Madam Chair, just to remind members, this is the amendment, a motion to refer, not to pass. So if we vote this on, it'll be referred to the General Register rather than taxes if this is adopted, and then vote again to pass the bill.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
I think it passed. Motion prevailed. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I kind of missed the teeth floating debate after this. But I will support this bill. I think it's important that we get a definition clarified. The horse industry is very important to the people of Minnesota and to the those who raise horses. I do a few points. First of all, Mr. Banasek, appreciate it if you send a letter out to the assessors saying that they shouldn't make any changes if this bill happens to pass down the line, because I did have assessors raise concerns to me about the impact that this would have. I'm sure you've heard the same things. Secondly, if there is any conflict with federal law, I think that this should be explored. I've been trying to get some opinions on what is the federal law. There seems to be confusion, and So I think we should make sure that the laws do match up and we're not conflicting with federal law. And also, I just through the course of this, the question, you know, coming up on what do you do with a dead horse? I have difficulty believing that we can't transport them on highways in a rendering truck. I mean, you must be able to do that. And what do? You either have a renderer haul it away, you bury it on your farm, what do you have to have a, you know, environmentalist, why do you have a vault? If you burn it, do you compost? Or what? Somebody ask the question, what do you do with a dead horse now?
Right now, I can tell you, in Minnesota, it gets a lot buried.
It is against the law to bury one. It is legal to compost them. The other thing is the rendering truck, but that will go back to the if you read that bill, like I say, I don't know if it's passed or if it is going to pass, about hauling horses, horse byproducts and stuff like that. But that would affect the rendering truck. I mean, the rendering truck, according to the way that is worded, the rendering truck could not pick up that horse.
And Madam Chair, that's the federal law that you're referring to, right?
Federal law, correct.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Federal law.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry.
Just one question. As I was hearing earlier from one testifier saying that a lot of municipalities, being that it is classified as a companion animal, you would not be able to have it in a municipal area. But what about a high-density township area where you've got numerous homes and such that might be closer to each other? Would any of these township rules right now classify somebody that has one right now that they could no longer have that horse?
Madam Chair, Representative Cass, I believe that would be subject to local zoning rules and regulations.
So currently, right now, though, that could happen?
Sure. That's my understanding. Madam Chair? If that's all, I just wanted to say thank you. And hopefully anyone, I do appreciate anyone who does vote no that they say no instead of nay. No, thank you very much.
Representative Hamilton, will you renew your motion?
Madam Chair, I renew my motion that House File 797, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you very much.
Representative Dunkey.
Madam Chair, while he's making his way to the testifying stand here, I move House File 841 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Commerce and Labor.
Representative Dunkey, you can proceed now.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this is a this is a repealer bill to repeal the sunset on the farmer lender mediation. This is something that's been around since the 80s, for those that remember back when we had a lot of farm foreclosures. It's administered with the University of Minnesota Extension Service. It's proved to be a very good program. And every few years we get this back for a review with the sunset. I would suggest the committee is probably familiar with it, but we have two decisions on here to talk about, or you do as a committee, at least one of them for sure. Number one, typically what happens with these bills over the 13 years I've been here, if I remember correctly, is that usually the House removes the sunset, and then the Senate puts in a sunset again, and then we end up with a sunset. I know Senator Rest and others over there are persnickety about that, but as a House, we've usually just removed it, so it's a good program. Let's just leave it the way it is, and it's worked for, you know, 20, 30 years, and it's not going to change anytime soon. So So that's the decision you all have to make. I'm not going to make it. You're the policy committee. You need to decide the policy. Should it just sunset, or do you want to put a sunset in for 3 or 4 years down the line? And the second issue with this bill this year is the de minimis level for requesting a mediation. Anyone who's a lender to any farmer out there can request mediation, whether you're an implement dealer or a feed dealer or seed dealer or fertilizer dealer or banker or CD holder or anyone who has leverage over that grower can request mediation if $5,000 or more is in default with that borrower and so or that lender. And so that's a fiscal issue we need to talk about. I'm not prepared to recommend anything today. Again, if you on the committee want to talk about it or even do amendments or try them, that's fine. I'm going to request it after Commerce into my committee, and I'm asking people to bring me more information on why or not it should be lifted from that $5,000 level. Again, you've got this handout in there. Basically, what you see with mediations, there's about 2,000 of them a year. I'm rounding now. About a third of those actually go to mediation, and out of those that go, and of the total amount, only 25% end up being settled. So out of that 2,000, about 500 of them end up being settled in mediation, and all the others go a different route. So I would suggest for those 500 people, it's a very good program. Obviously, we've mediated and we've hopefully saved a farmer or a farm and worked something out with the lenders. So I think that's good. The information I don't have is apparently, and I think the university is here too who runs it, apparently when you request mediation, you do not assign a dollar amount to that mediation request. And maybe that's something we should require going into the future and something my committee will certainly look at. Because right now we don't have any statistics on what dollar amounts are being filed for mediation. And a lot of times I understand, and again it's all anecdotal, that perhaps it's being used as a collection tool. If you're an implement dealer and you have a $5,001 debt on a farmer and he or she misses their payment, you may file for mediation rather than calling the collection agency, because that would be a cheaper, I suspect, route to go. Then the farmer gets their mediation request and they perk up and go, wait a minute, you know, I don't want to go through mediation for a $5,001 bill, and they write the check out to the implement dealer and it's done. That might be some of them you don't see go in there. I'm not saying that's good or bad, but what I'm saying is we don't have information to know what's being requested. You know, how many between $5,000 and $10,000, how many between $10,000 and $25,000, how many between $25,000 and $50,000, etc. You can see the average debt of the borrowers is going down in the second from the right column, from $700,000 to $800,000 down to about $300,000 in recent years. Did you hand that out? You all have this? Okay. So I'm referring to that. This is right off of their website and was compiled by the bankers. But it's right off their website, and these are accurate figures. But again, we're lacking numbers, and I have no advice whatsoever today on that de minimis amount. So that's, again, a fiscal issue that our committee will be looking at. If you want to talk about it or do anything today, you can, but realize there may be more information coming in the next 2 or 3 weeks before we put our bill together, and we will review it down there, too, once it's done in Commerce. But I do think, as a policy issue, you do need to discuss and decide what you as a committee want to do on the sunset.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Junkie, for bringing this forward. It's a very good bill, a good program that I've supported in the past and will continue to support. And I appreciate the fact that you raised a few of the concerns, a few of the challenges maybe, moving forward with the dollar amounts, questions and stuff like that. Couple questions here, Representative Junkie, or Chair Junkie. One, has there ever been an auditor's report done on this program?
Madam Chair and Representative Hamilton, actually, no, in fact, and my CA is sitting here too, he can attest to this, honest to God, and your CA too, that the auditor's office called Friday asking for suggestions from me on anything we ought to look at in the future, and this was one of the things I recommended.
from our committee as a chair, anyway, that perhaps they want to look at the effectiveness of the program and should it be updated in any way, modernized in any way. And I would like to see them do that. But again, that was a suggestion we're just making today to the auditor's office. So I don't know if you were listening in my office with that conversation.
No, Representative Hamill. Just for the record, no, Chair Johnson.
All right.
You know, I'm working on that. So I can do that. So, Chair Johnson, my second question then, if that's a request potentially for the auditor's report, I had two amendments here today, and I would like to work together with everybody and raise one for sure, and that is for the expiration. That would be the, Madam Chair, the A09-0062. And Chair Junkie, what I was thinking is if we're going to request the auditor's report, instead of doing this indefinitely or permanently, just to have it sunset, you know, a four-year extension, give the auditors a chance to do their piece, and then we can come back and work off of that. My second amendment I'm not going to offer, Madam Chair, because I really appreciate what Chair Junkie had said about the dollar amount, and it'd be interesting to gather more of that information as well. But if I could, Madam Chair, move the A09-0062 amendment at this time.
Maybe we could have some of the testifiers go before you.
Okay. I withdraw that motion temporarily.
President Hamilton, we can make the motion. I just suggested accepting the motion, but I think a lot of the testifiers here might want to testify to it, so we just wait on voting until we get through the testifiers list.
Would you like me to make the motion again, Madam Chair, or just wait? I can wait.
Jim Anderson. Welcome. Could you give us your name for us?
Madam Chair members, I'm Jim Anderson. I'm from Rochester, Minnesota, and I'm with the Extension Service. I've worked in the on and off in the aviation program since its start in the 80s. And I'm here, I am the B team today. I'm here for Mary Nell, who is having some health issues, but she's doing fine. And she sends her greetings.
John Abbott, do you want to talk to us? If more of you want to come up at the same time, it's fine, too.
Thank you, Madam Chair. David's here. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Appitz. I'm with the law firm of Messerly and Kramer, and I'm representing Farm Credit Services today, which is an agricultural lender here in the state of Minnesota. I'd like to offer, if I could, just before David steps up, a little bit of background. I'm glad that Jim's here because he can help with some of this background. A little bit of history. I work with something called the History Theater, and that was a commercial. And sometimes it's helpful to gather a little bit of history, but I don't think anybody around this table was here 22 years ago when we passed this law. I happen to have been around, not in this body, but working at the Attorney General's office. And we passed the Farmer Lender Mediation Act as a temporary measure 22 years ago. Passed it, supposed to be in place for 2 years. And 22 years later, we're sitting here having a conversation about it once again, and it's a good conversation because sometimes it's hard to let good things pass or sunset. But clearly, that was a different time. And I just want to set the context for the conversation and the decision you're about to make. The mid-1980s was a time of serious unrest. There were a lot of folks up here who didn't have election certificates and they weren't registered as lobbyists, but they were awful concerned about what was happening on the land, what was happening throughout greater Minnesota. They were concerned about what was going to, whether or not they were going to be able to keep their property. But before I go to that, let me just read a quick bit of the Minnesota State Constitution, which mirrors the U.S. Constitution. It happens to be Article 1, Section 11, that deals with the dangerous ex post facto laws and laws impairing contracts prohibited. It says no bill of attainder ex post facto law or any law impairing the obligation of contracts shall be passed. That's the Minnesota Constitution. That's the foundation on which you all make the laws that you make. But let me give you a description of what it was like in 1986 when the state legislature decided to challenge even the Minnesota Constitution. And I won't do this from memory, I'll do it from statute, because if you want to take a peek, you can go look at Minnesota Statute 583.21, which are the legislative findings that were enacted at that period of time when farmer-lender mediation came to pass. And it said that the legislature finds that the agricultural sector of the state's economy is under severe financial stress due to low farm commodity prices, continuing high interest rates, and reduced farm income. The suffering agricultural economy adversely affects economic conditions for all other businesses in rural communities as well. The thousands of the state's farmers are unable to meet current payments of interest and principal payable on mortgages or other loan and land contracts and are threatened with loss of their farmland, equipment, crops, and real estate through mortgage and lien foreclosure, cancellation of contracts for deed, and other collection actions. The agricultural economic emergency requires an orderly process with state assistance to adjust agricultural indebtedness to prevent civil unrest and to preserve the general welfare and physical integrity of the state. That was the condition that we saw in 1986 and the conditions under which we enacted the Farmer Lender, you all enacted the Farmer Lender Mediation Act. I chance to say that today is not that day, thank goodness. Today is not that time, thank goodness. I'd submit that there was a very critical situation in place then, and that's why the legislature passed the Farmer Lender Mediation Act. That act was tested in a case called Blaisdell, and a person from Flag here can give you, an attorney can give you a much better reading of that when I step away from the podium. But even the Supreme Court found that passage of the Farmer Lender Mediation Act, because of its temporary nature, was going to be allowed to stand in the face of the constitutional provisions that I just read to you. I'm here representing Farm Credit Services. For a number of years, Farm Credit Services has opposed continuation of the Farmer Lender Mediation Act, but Farm Credit Services has had its own obligation under federal law to restructure or mediate debts since the mid-80s, and have done that and will continue to do that. Today we're here in a little bit different situation. We're here to support the continuation of farmer lender mediation with a couple of caveats. The first caveat is the one that Chairman Junkie spoke to you about, and that is that it be continued on a temporary basis, that we not make it permanent, and that we give it an examination, not unlike the one that was just the subject of conversation here. And secondly, that we consider changes that have taken place in 22 years when the threshold was first set at $5,000 for triggering mediation. What that level should be, as Chairman Junkie said, is for you to decide and perhaps to be decided in another committee. But I want to just turn to my colleague here, David Skillbred, and walk through some of the information that we received, that you received from the mediation from Farmer Lender Mediation and the Extension Service in the chart that that you see right here before you. I think it's a copy of this in your packet. And I think it's telling in terms of why those two caveats that I suggested might be useful for you to consider. David, that's enough of my spiel.
Madam Chair, David Skillbred. I'm the Vice President of Government Relations for the Independent Community Bankers of Minnesota, a statewide association of about 300 and some privately held, community-focused banks here in the state. I want to thank Mr. Appert for the presentation, which is very, very important to this discussion. Chairman Junkie started to go through this chart, and I just want to go through it in a little more detail. I'll give you the end of the story first. And the end of the story is Like Mr. Abbott, our position on this is that we believe that eventually, because this is a temporary program, it should go away. Today we're here not because we think this is the year, however, and therefore we suggest to you that, number one, we preserve the temporary nature, at least in theory and philosophically, by not making it permanent and go to another extension. And number two, that we evaluate the program today, at least to some degree, so that we might improve it and put some reasonable parameters on it after these 22 years have come to pass. The chart, I think, presents us with an idea for the reasonable parameters, and that gets at the second point that Chairman Junkie made, namely the trigger mechanism that triggers remediation. As the chairman said, right now, if there's an ag debt greater than $5,000, a creditor must forego foreclosure and offer mediation to the borrower, and then it's the borrower's decision whether or not to accept the mediation. So in 1986, the threshold was $5,000, and now 22 years later, that $5,000 threshold remains the trigger. I think if you all think back to 1986 and where you were in your life and what $5,000 meant at that time versus what it means at this time, I think you get the drift of where we're going, and I think these numbers will hold that up. So just to quickly go through a couple of columns of this chart, column number two shows the last five fiscal years, how many cases were opened because they were of that $5,000 amount. So in 2008, there were 2,002 cases opened. Column 4 shows the number of those cases that were waived because the farmers or the borrowers chose not to pursue mediation. And in the case of 2008, 1,362 of those individuals, those families, chose not to pursue mediation, or 68% of the cases that were opened. If you look down that column a little bit, you'll see that the low is 61% and the high is 70%. So every year for the last 5 years or so, 61 to 70% of those cases have been waived by the borrower. The next column shows the percent of cases that were mediated as a percent of those cases opened. So in 2008, 640 cases were mediated of those 1,360, of those 2,002 that were opened. And then of those 640, the next column shows how many actually reached a settlement. So 500 cases of those 640 that went to mediation actually reached a settlement. And if you look down on in that column number 6, you'll see that between 19 and 28% of the open cases actually reach a settlement. So the majority of the cases are always waived, a few more fall off because they can't reach a settlement, and ultimately then between 19 and 28% do. The last column that I'll look at...
Yeah, we need to...
okay.
Go.
On the last column, I just want to point out is column number 8, that shows the average ag debt per borrower. So in 2008, that happened to be the low of the last 5 years, $273,000. In 2006, the high was $991,000. Compare that amount to the $5,000 trigger. In conclusion, Madam Chair and members, we believe that it would be reasonable to raise that $5,000 trigger and raise it up enough so that it matches the reality of these farmers who are choosing to waive access to this program. By doing so, you should be able to cut out some of the paperwork but still preserve the program for those people who want to pursue it. With that, since of the time delay, I'll close it up and thank you very much.
Bill, Peter, we have to go really, 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 really fast.
Just a question for me. buck 92.
Sorry?
Who was that for 10 years?
So, very quickly, Madam Chair, my name is Jill Krieger. I'm an attorney with Farmers Legal Action Group, and I'm here representing the Minnesota Family Farm Law Project. And I'll try to go quickly and hit just the highlights. We are here to support the bill as introduced as a permanent, as an elimination of the sunset of the Farmer Lender Mediation Program. And I do want to point out that actually our neighbor to the west, North Dakota, eliminated the sunset of its Farmer Lender Mediation Program back in 2001. And so they've been spared from such legislative sessions and hearings about the program for 7 years and have just been going early on.
We have about a minute.
Okay. To address the issue of the threshold amount, essentially the lenders are asking for a 20-fold increase in a year where we're facing the most difficult economy that we've had in about 70 years. So I do think that it's not the time for that, but we're not opposed across the board to some adjustment for inflation as long as we do that systematically so that we look at the exemption from creditor actions in Minnesota statute 550.37. That's been fixed at $13,000 for farm machinery for about 20 years as well. The standard for access to legal services has said that the income for farmers should be $15,000 to obtain access to legal aid. And that, again, has been fixed for over 20 years. So if we're going to say, oh, let's adjust numbers for the passage of time, I would suggest that it's not just in terms of access to the mediation program, but also for these other issues. Finally, one last point I wanted to make was that, yes, farming has changed, but we also have an influx of new and beginning farmers, immigrant farmers, folks who may be operating not traditional row crop or livestock operations, but vegetable operations, which are less capital intensive, but nonetheless need access to the mediation program. And so that there is interest in our food system, not the same interest in the 1980s, but we have Michael Pollan's Omnivore's Dilemma, Barbara Kingsolver's books. So there is a great interest in our food and our farmers and how we meet our local food needs. Representative Hammond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the A09-0062 amendment for the reasons I stated earlier.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Committee is adjourned.